Minnesota, you can join us at KAXE.org. Right now it is time for the World Cafe.
Coming up, it's the World Cafe. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. Telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Find playlists, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org.
But it was right on.
Brandi Carlile is one of Americana's biggest stars. She's a multiple Grammy winner with an incredible, unique voice, and she's performed with her heroes, heroes like Elton John. But back when she was a kid, Brandi Carlile didn't just want to sing with Elton John, she wanted to be just like him. And she asked her mom to buy her a costume from the Catholic Church Clothing Mission so she could sing Honky Cat in a talent contest.
I loved it, and I had seen it the week before, and my mom's like, no way in hell. And I was like, but I really want that. And she's like, that's like a total dead guy suit. Like, you don't want that.
Brandi Carlile has a new album out this month, so we're revisiting her last session from 2021 when she told lots of stories, including that one. An hour with Brandi Carlile on the way. I'm Raina Duras. This is an Encore World Cafe. Better get back to the woods.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. Two people from Park Rapids are facing multiple felony charges for their roles in an alleged attempted murder early Saturday morning. Court documents accuse 43-year-old Charles Justice of entering a Hubbard County trailer home and stabbing a man. Deputies responded to Piney Park around 3 a.m. on report of a man bleeding with possible stab wounds and his 5-year-old daughter screaming for help. The victim was airlifted to Fargo for treatment of his injuries. Justice allegedly admitted to using methamphetamine and believed his wife, Danielle Westfall, was having an affair with the victim. Authorities say 51-year-old Westfall eventually admitted to helping Justice dispose of the bloody clothing from the assault. A pair of blood-soaked jeans were found on the side of the road as part of the investigation in the same area where Westfall said she disposed of them. Both are set to appear in court on Monday. The state of Minnesota intends to seek a stiffer penalty than usual in the criminal sexual conduct case against a former teacher at two Iron Range schools. 43-year-old Ryan Denzer Johnson of Embarrass faces three felonies after he allegedly sexually assaulted an adolescent female relative. Denzer Johnson was most recently a high school math teacher at Mesabi East in Aurora until his resignation shortly before the charges in August. He also taught at Northeast Range in Babbitt and was involved in both schools' robotics teams. The prosecutor filed a notice of intent to seek the upward departure of sentencing guidelines based on aggravating factors. One of the factors is the victim's particular vulnerability due to her age and relationship to Denzer Johnson. The second factor listed in court documents is that the alleged offense was committed in a location in which the victim had an expectation of privacy. Denzer Johnson remains jailed in St. Louis County, and his next court appearance is Monday. The Black Duck City Council passed an amended cannabis ordinance after a lengthy public hearing on Monday. Larissa Donovan was there and has more.
The zoning amendment removes the required buffers around schools and daycares for cannabis manufacturers and cultivators, leaving the buffers in place for dispensaries. Cannabis entrepreneur Alan Bonset with his company Nobo wants to buy the former Anderson Fabrics manufacturing plant in Black Duck's industrial area, but the plant is less than 100 yards away from Black Duck Head Start, an early childhood center. With the changes approved, Nobo is that much closer to its proposed cannabis cultivation and manufacturing facility that promises up to 150 new jobs. Residents raised concerns ranging from excess phosphorus in wastewater and potential crime increases to the business's proximity to Head Start. In response, Bonset cited the company's intense security protocols and technical procedures, the industry's heavy regulation, and his company's practice of investing in their people.
We're also a company that offers employee stock options to our employees. And in fact, we are in the 97th percentile of all cannabis companies nationally as far as what our benefits offer.
Mayor Max Gillette says he checked in with his counterpart in Benton Harbor, Michigan, where Nobo purchased an old foundry, and that he felt assured that the company would do right by Black Duck.
Nobo is a company that put its money where its mouth is, and Alan's the type of person that when he says he's going to do something, he does it.
Councilmember Lori Hamilton agreed with most of the council, saying with the state's legalization, they can't manipulate ordinances to keep out cannabis.
I don't feel like this company is coming in here to wreck this town. I feel like they're a business. They have a product.
Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
Lakewood Health System will host an open house for its new cancer center 4 to 6 p.m. Friday in Staples. Hospital leaders say the addition was built to meet growing needs for rural oncology care. The new center offers things like a dedicated reception and waiting area, infusion bays, exam rooms and a procedure room, in-house scan systems, and radiation treatment technology. This is the second new cancer center in the region to open this year. Astera Health and CentraCare hosted a ribbon-cutting ceremony in Wadena in July. Without centers like these offering services, rural cancer patients often must travel long distances to get the care they need. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
This is an Encore World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras. On October 24th, you'll be able to pick up the new album from Brandi Carlile called Returning to Myself. That same day, she'll also be on the show. But right now, to get you excited for that, we're revisiting her last appearance on the cafe from 2021. Enjoy. Warmth. That's the word that keeps popping up when I try to decide how to describe Brandi Carlile. Warmth is what she treats you with in conversation. She's always ready with a laugh, a thoughtful answer, or a curious question. You can see how her warmth draws people to her in her personal life. She lives on a big compound full of family and friends. And in her professional life, see her countless side projects. And of course, the warmth of Brandi's voice and songwriting, which is on full display on her new album, In These Silent Days. Today, you'll hear my conversation with Brandi Carlile. We'll be talking about that new album and her recent memoir, Broken Horses. So get cozy. We begin with a song from In These Silent Days. It is Brandi Carlile, Right on Time.
Back now, even if you call me out, you might be angry now. Of course you are. I'm scared too. Didn't mean to take it out on you. I know I always do. You're the strongest person in the room. To rewind and we can find ourselves again. It's not too late. Either way, I lose you in these silent days. It wasn't right, but it was right on.
Performed live for World Cafe, that was Brandi Carlile with Right on Time from her new album, In These Silent Days. Brandi Carlile is my guest today. Brandi, welcome back to the World Cafe.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
So nice to have you. Last time you were on the show, I think it was at the very, very beginning of 2018, and a lot has happened since then. You won a bunch of Grammys. Your daughter, Elijah, was born. You wrote a memoir. That's only some of it. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a pretty crazy couple of years. Yeah. A lot of fodder for, you know, material. Writers are, I think, pretty happy in the moment.
Yeah. I mean, another big thing that's happened since you were on the show last, obviously, was the pandemic. The pandemic, it became kind of the backdrop to the writing of your new album. You wrote it with your bandmates and collaborators, Tim and Phil Hansroth, who mm-hmm. also are playing with you in the live performances that we're hearing today. You've worked together for years, but how did working through COVID make this time different?
Well, it was different in so many ways because, you know, we are kind of culty and we're big on community with each other. We all live out here on the same piece of property, and we were sort of depending on each other for these projects. We kept doing construction projects, building decks and gardens and doing finished carpentry in each other's houses just to stay productive, because I think at the end of the day, the thing about me and the twins is we have to work together. It's like, it's how we walk through the world at this point. Now, for the most of the time we've been alive, we've been working together. And so even if music seems like the furthest thing from our mind or the last thing that's possible, you know, we have to build a deck then, or right. a garden, or take something apart. And so we were doing that, and it was like the same kind of work flow, the same kind of creativity. And I was trying to finish that book, which was really, really hard for me. And I was blocked because the concept of having to finish something in such a definitive way during one of the most uncertain times in human history just really felt too big for me. Yeah. And when I did finish it, that's when the gates just opened.
Right. You know, the songs on this album, to me, seem to have kind of a common thread of resilience. Like, there's this acknowledgement that things can get really hard, but it's also kind of like you're shining a light and reaching out a hand. In your memoir, you talk about being an empath and, you know, that wanting to make people feel better. Was that a role that you found yourself in a lot during this past year or so?
Yeah, especially after we lost John Prine, I felt like there was this almost universal despair that had fallen upon me and my friends and my peers and all of us who had been put out of work in such a profound way. We knew we'd be the last back. And we were grappling with all kinds of existential dread. I started trying to find ways to put together that variety show, the compound quarantine show for our core fan base, the Bramley, and it was really goofy. We basically, you know, tried to make each other laugh as best we could, but I really recognized how dire the situation was for so many of us. And I actually took a lot of inspiration from John Prine about that, because I remember John as having this really twisted sense of humor that was so good that, like, even when he was singing you a song that was, the outlook was so bleak, there would always be this moment of a chuckle in it, or at least an eyebrow raise of a folksy, everyman kind of relatability. And I thought, well, that really is the way to work through tragedy and hard times. Like, if we can't have a sick sense of humor, if we can't laugh at something, you know, where will we be? When John died and we couldn't work it out that way, we couldn't get on stage and tell jokes and sing his songs and, like, insert his little chuckles and his little pieces of folksy wisdom, it was really hard to work through the loss of him.
Yeah.
And that's a thing. I'll never forget when I got to go to the studio when he was recording Tree of Forgiveness, and he wanted me to play a kazoo with him and his wife Fiona and Yodel
on that song, When I Get to Heaven.
Yep.
Which is such a good song. And I wound up yodeling at the end, and I'll never forget him. He thought that was so funny. But when he first played it for me, he was staring at me so intensely in this like third verse moment. And I was like, why is he looking at me? Or it might have been the second verse. But when he gets to the lyric that says, buddy, when you're dead, you're a dead peckerhead. He was looking at me like he could not wait for me to hear that line. And I just burst into hysterics, and he burst into hysterics. And it's one of the fondest moments I'll ever remember because of the way he looked at death and darkness and humanity when it's not at its best. Always had a chuckle. Yeah. So I guess maybe an empathic person would pick up on that and want to emulate it in such a hard time. And the loss of him both inspired that in me, but made it hard too.
I think we have to listen to that song really quick. When I Get to Heaven, this is John Prine.
And I always will remember these words my daddy said. He said, buddy, when you're dead, you're a dead peckerhead. I hope to prove him wrong. That is, when I get to heaven. 'Cause I'm going to have a cocktail, vodka and ginger ale. Yeah, I'm going to smoke a cigarette that's 9 miles long. I'm going to kiss that pretty girl on the tilt-a-whirl. Yeah, this old man is going to town. Yeah, this old man is going to town.
So that was When I Get to Heaven from John Prine. Brandi Carlile yodeling on that track. And Brandi Carlile is my guest today. She's just released a new album called In These Silent Days. We're going to hear another live performance from you next. I noticed that the word Babylon shows up in the lyrics of two of the songs that you're playing for us today. You and Me on the Rock, which we're going to hear later on, and the song that we're going to hear now called This Time Tomorrow. What's the significance of Babylon for you?
Oh my gosh. Well, that's the first time I've ever been asked that question. And it's a really, really good question. It's one of those things like Sodom and Gomorrah that I find to be a really dark and misunderstood biblical concept. I'm fascinated by the Tower of Babel and speaking in tongues and the concept of babbling and people not being able to understand each other as the fall of harmonious society.
All right. Okay. I feel like take that into this song with you as you hear it perform live for World Cafe This Time Tomorrow from Brandi Carlile.
When the fire inside that burns so bright begins to grow faded, it can be hard to see the ground on which you stand. Though you may not be afraid of walking in the darkness, you will feel like a stranger in this land. You can try to carve a faith out of your own, but a broken spirit may dry out the bone. And the edges of the night may cause you sorrow. You know I may not be around this time tomorrow, but I'll always be with you. Yeah, I'll always be with you. When the hope that you hold tightly to is all but vanished, and there are no words of comfort to be found, you will know what it means to be lost and without love. May you fight to kill that deafening sound. But our holy dreams of yesterday are gone. They still haunt us like the ghosts of Babylon. And the breaking of the day might bring you sorrow. You know I may not be around this time tomorrow, but I'll always be with you. Yeah, I'll always be with you. carve a faith out of your own. But a broken spirit may dry out the bone, and the edges of the night may cause you sorrow. You know I may not be around this time tomorrow, but our holy dreams of yesterday are gone. They still haunt us like the ghosts of Babylon. And the breaking of the day might bring you sorrow. You know I may not be around this time tomorrow, but I'll always be with you. Yeah, I'll always be with you. I will always be with you. I'll always be with you.
You just heard This Time Tomorrow from my guest today, Brandi Carlile. After the break, Brandi talks about going from a kid who loved traditional country to dressing up like Elton John in a homemade suit. That's next on World Cafe. This is an Encore World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras. You're hearing my session with Brandi Carlile from 2021, when she just released her album, In These Silent Days. She also put out her memoir, Broken Horses, earlier that year. You mentioned before that when you finished writing the book, the floodgates for the lyrics of this album kind of opened up. But could you elaborate on how writing the memoir and making this album intertwined?
They intertwined really seamlessly, because when I did become unblocked and when I was able to finish the book in that last chapter, Stardust and the Continuum, in such an uncertain time, it really opened up the future to me with perspective on the past. It's really interesting how, like, and honestly, I recommend that, like, every single person, no matter who you are, no matter what you do for a living or where you come from, sit down and write your life. Like, just spend a year, spend 6 months and do it. And you'll find yourself really inspiring all the things that you've come through and all the things that make you who you are. And if you think you're uninteresting, that's one way to know that you're not uninteresting at all. It's a really amazing practice to mine your soul chronologically like that. And that's what happened to me, is that it just gave me all this perspective and gratitude and righteous anger and, you know, subsequent forgiveness. And it became really easy to write the album. And the song Broken Horses was some of that righteous anger that I was sort of dissolving by writing that song.
Let's listen to a clip of Broken Horses right now. It's Brandi Carlile on World Cafe.
Oh, well, my father's leather on the inside of my skin. I'm hitching, riding with her. Oh, the fields that lead for miles, fried into the pebble of a gun. Mending up your fences with my horses running wild. Only broken horses know to run.
That was a bit of Broken Horses from Brandi Carlile's new album, In These Silent Days. Broken Horses, also the name of her memoir. Brandi, in the book, you talk about a couple of early experiences with music on cassette tapes that were pivotal for you and your family and kind of set you off on your path. So could you talk a little bit just about the role music played in your house growing up?
Music was so fundamental in my house growing up. It was loaded. Had a lot of cultural impact on me, listening to traditional country music and just kind of being steeped in rural sentimentality, folksiness, relatability, humility, humbleness. But in that, there's also a connotation of virtue in this sort of like heteronormative world that I was really only sort of snow globing, which is a term that I use for being on the outside of it and looking in. And you know, the way you feel when you look at a snow globe and you see the little cabin inside with the lit up windows, like the Kincaid, and the snow's coming down and the trains in the background and you want to live in it. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like to grow up in a household listening to traditional country music.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I was like 11 or 12 and I was introduced in a really profound way to Elton John that I became departed from my family lineage in that way. And I went to the King County Library on my own, on my own accord, I should say. And I checked out a couple of CDs, because you could check out CDs then, and which I still have, don't tell the King County Librarian Birian. And a book called Elton John by Philip Norman, which is like a 600-page biography, which is pretty heavy lift for an 11 or 12-year-old.
Yeah.
And through that book, I discovered Elton John, but also the Beatles, also David Bowie and George Michael, and then, God, Freddie Mercury and Queen, which was so transformative. And I suddenly was like introduced to the concept of flamboyance. You know, mm-hmm. I had always had eccentricity with Elvis Presley and with the Grand Ole Opry. I mean, it doesn't get more eccentric than Minnie Pearl, you know, or little Jimmy Dickens or 70s Elvis in his jumpsuits, but flamboyance was gay. That was queer. It started to excavate big parts of who I was that just weren't in my household. And that was a turning point for me as a person and as the artist that I then became from that.
It's interesting because when you say flamboyance was gay, I think a lot of people think, well, like for male gay artists, you can be mm-hmm. flamboyant. But I feel like maybe that expectations, if you're a gay female artist, mm-hmm. to be flamboyant, like I try to think of other people that I would think of
yeah.
who are flamboyant. And there aren't that many examples I can come up with.
No, Annie Lennox.
Yep.
But she's straight, but still really formative and influential to me. You know, and not too many, but it is in me. And yeah. that's kind of where this non-binary concept really makes sense to me, you know, is like where I feel like I'm more in touch with my femininity in a suit standing on the edge of a stage in a Shakespearean pose, you know, than I do like washing my kids' hair.
Right. There's this great story in the book where you talk about your mom making you an Elton John style suit so you can perform Honky Cat. What did the suit look like?
Well, it was a white polyester, like off-white polyester, three-piece man's oversized suit that we had picked up from the Catholic Church clothing mission in Black Diamond, where we used to go pick up our clothes for free on Tuesdays, you know, the clothing bank, we called it. And I loved it. And I had seen it the week before. And my mom's like, no way in hell. And I was like, but I really want that. And she's like, that's like a total dead guy suit. Like, you don't want that. That's a man's clothing, you know? And
And I used to enter these sort of singing contests, these like karaoke contests, along with all these other girls in my area, from Auburn to Black Diamond to Enumclaw. And they were like pageants, really. They were not really singing contests. They were pageants, you know. And all of the girls would have their updos, and they'd be totally makeup and, you know, evening gowns. And they all had choreographed dances, but they were always doing I Will Always Love You, or they were doing From a Distance by Bette Midler, or they were doing, you know, they had the songs that they were doing, Hero by Mariah Carey every time, and the big vocal moments and stuff.
Oh yeah.
And I would just go and sign up and lose and lose and lose. I always sang Fancy by Reba McEntire. I remember it all very well. Looking back, it was the summer I turned 18. And one time I saw Elton John singing Honky Cat live somewhere, and he just looked so joyful, and he had like a white suit on and these big feathered glasses, and it was, you know, ba 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 da. And there was a little yodel in it, and I was like, that's my act. Next time I enter one of these things, I'm doing Honky Cat. And when I told my mom that was my plan, she was just like bummed, because it was just a contest that, you know, it was like, if you won, you got $10,000 and a scholarship to a music school. And I was obviously not going to win with Honky Cat, but she realized how important it was to me, and she bedazzled the white suit from the clothing mission with rhinestones and sequins, and we bought some boat shoes, and she put an E and a J on each shoe and made me these big feather glasses, you know, out of pipe cleaners and stuff. And yeah, I went out there and totally died, but it was a pretty pivotal moment of expression for me, and I thought I was pretty awesome while it was going down.
Okay, so now with that in mind, imagine a young Brandi Carlile in that suit performing this song. It's Honky Cat, Elton John.
When I look back, boy, I must have been green. Bopping in the country, fishing in a stream. Looking for an answer, trying to find a sign. Until I saw your city lights, honey, I was blind. To the woods, well, I quit in those days and my redneck ways, and change is gonna do me good.
So that was a bit of Honky Cat from Elton John. I am speaking with Brandi Carlile today on World Cafe. My name is Raina Duris. I want to play the song Crowded Table from your band, The High Women, next. The High Women is you, Amanda Shires, Natalie Hemby, and Maren Morris. You're all very busy people with other projects. So why was this project so important for you to all come together to get it off the ground?
Well, by the way, your questions are so good. This is like lending itself to such a good conversation. I'm really grateful that you're, you know, digging so deep and talking about such interesting things. You know, it's some of the stuff that we touched on about this kind of what country music presents us as far as options in our youth. And country music is a culture. It's like a lifestyle. It's a persuasion. Sometimes it's even affiliated with a political party, sadly, which is sad because it didn't used to be. But for me, it was all about what country music had to offer me as a kid. It didn't have any mirroring to offer me or any representation, but there were at least women, you know, telling stories from a non-male persuasion. And that was really important to me because I had them, you know. I had Trisha and I had Tanya and I had Reba and I had all the girls, and they were on the radio all the time in their concerts. They were coming to town. I couldn't go, but it was still always a thing. And I was covering their songs and singing them on stage and karaoke contests and small theaters. And so I was able to at least have a foothold in that culture. And it was all I was allowed to listen to. And I'm not the only kid in America that was only allowed to listen to country music. And currently, might even be more kids in America only allowed to listen to country music. And that's, at the time,
okay,
we started.
I'm just going to stop you for 1 second, because that's so interesting. I grew up in Toronto. I had very little exposure to country music. The idea of being only allowed to listen to country music, why is that? Why is that a thing?
Well, because I think that in some places in the Midwest and rural America and the South, country music has aligned itself with virtuousness and right. the right way to live. It's in step with faith. It's in step with God. It's in step with our politics. It's not my favorite thing about what country music as an institution has done in the last 20 years.
Right.
But it's happened. And so it was, at least there was an essence of it in my household where listening to country music was met with a similar kind of acceptance and, you know, affection that, you know, church was. And, you know, Freddie Mercury and Queen weren't necessarily met with that same acceptance in my household. Right. And if, oh my God, if I had fallen in love with hip hop, you watch out. Like, it wouldn't have happened in my house. So I know there are other households across America where country music is still seen as the last bastion, the final frontier of virtuous music. And this has been going on since the 50s. You know, yeah. this music is evil, this music is good. Now, cut to the time that we started The High Woman, where only one woman had gone to number one on country radio in 2 years. Mm-hmm. One woman. And think about how many weeks there are in a year and how many men had gone to number one in that amount of time. And then dig just one layer deeper and think about the messages in the songs that the men were singing. You know, bro country was so toxic to objectifying, minimizing, and infantilizing women and girls. You know, that's something we can all agree on. As a mom, I cannot imagine a conservative mom or a conservative dad being happy with the concept of their daughter only being told in songs over and over again that she belongs in the passenger seat of a pickup truck with a koozie and short yeah. shorts. You know, it's like, that's not the message. You know, that's not, she's in love with the girl. That's not, you know, she's an eagle. These aren't the messages that we were given, just me in the 80s and 90s. And I felt The High Women were necessary because I knew that my story mattered and that if I could get that story into some of those living rooms, that maybe there'd be a me somewhere that could be helped by it. And I know all the other girls felt the same way about their own stories.
Crowded Table came up before the pandemic, but I remember it taking on this really heartbreaking poignancy on top of maybe its intended meaning when you first made the song, once people were isolated. Before we hear it right now, what does this song mean to you?
Well, I've hosted every holiday at my house since I was like, you know, 19 years old. Every Thanksgiving, every Christmas, the whole family, mom and dad, grandparents when they were alive, comes, you know, to me. And I don't know why that is. I think it's because I want it so bad. Like, I want it the worst. I want the crowded table. I want the cleanup. I want the drama. I want the fights. I want the two drunk people. I want the whole thing. So when the pandemic hit, I couldn't listen to this song.
Yeah, it made me cry multiple times, I think, during the pandemic. We would play it on the show, and I'd be like, well, I can't talk after this. We're going to have to put another song on.
Nope, just couldn't. I still can't access it because that was the saddest Thanksgiving and the saddest Christmas I can ever remember.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it about being in the presence of other people that gives you so much strength and happiness?
I don't know. I mean, some people would say I'm a perpetual codependent. I'll own that if I have to. I was born to be with people. I don't do alone. I do people, even with the conflict, even with the tension. Doesn't have to be perfect, but, you know, don't leave me alone.
I think that leads very nicely into this. It is Crowded Table, The High Women on World Cafe.
You can hold my hand when you need to let go. I can be a mountain when you're feeling valley low. I can be a street light showing you the way home. 'Cause you can hold every
On World Cafe, the High Women Crowded Table. I'm Rena Duris, joined by Brandi Carlile today. Earlier, we talked about the lack of representation of women on the radio. You've also, though, spoken in the past about the lack of support for people of color in the in country music. And you mentioned even how hip-hop might not be seen as virtuous in some households. How do you see your role in making room at the table for those artists?
Well, I think that what you have to do is you have to recognize when you're having a moment. You have to recognize when you have a platform. You have to see that open door and then hold it open. Get up on that platform, reach your hand down. And it's hard for people to know when enough is enough. It's hard for people to know when they're having a moment because they're always seeing the one ahead of them. But right now, I see my peers and my friends when they're having their moments giving each other a leg up, especially the people of color in roots music right now. Watching them support each other is like unbelievable. If you get on their social media, you see it's flooded with their friends' releases, their tour dates, their kids, their dogs, whatever they can do to support each other. That's a real example. And I've seen, you know, queer people do that too. And when I see sort of cis white folks doing that, I'm really heartened because their platform is super important.
I'm speaking with Brandi Carlile. If you've ever fallen in love with an artist you thought you didn't really like, Brandi will get into how that happened for her with Joni Mitchell next on World Cafe. Welcome back to an encore World Cafe. If you're just joining in, I'm Rena Duris, and this hour you're hearing a session with Brandi Carlile from 2021, where we talk about her album In These Silent Days and her memoir, Broken Horses.
The last chapter of your memoir, you talk about the uncertainty and sort of looking towards this future where you don't know what it's going to look like or how touring is going to be again, but you are playing shows again, at least at the time we're recording this interview. You've played some shows, you have some scheduled, including a show in November where you're going to perform Joni Mitchell's Blue in its entirety at Carnegie Hall. You've performed that album before. You've called it the greatest album ever made, but mm-hmm. I understand that you were kind of a late bloomer when it came to Joni. No judgment, because I also was.
Really?
Yeah.
Why were you?
I don't know. And this,
I'm interested.
I've been asking myself this question as I've been getting ready to talk to you. I couldn't figure out what it was I didn't like about Joni. There was like I guess when I really interrogate myself about it, I'm a big fan of a lot of her contemporaries who, you know, Bob Dylan, people like Neil Young. I feel like I didn't, her voice to me at first, or like the way that her songs moved, it felt very, I don't want to say this because it sounds terrible, but it felt like very feminine to me.
I'm the same. Exactly, yeah. My same reason, but keep going.
Yeah. And that was it, I guess. And then one day, I guess it was a few years ago, I was working on a special sort of series for a radio show I hosted. Mm-hmm. Where I had to dive into her catalog and choose five of her like most essential tracks. And yeah. I couldn't believe that I had like discounted mm-hmm. this person's talent for so long. She's a genius.
I know. I know exactly what you're saying. We're the same person when it comes to when you find Joni Mitchell and you're so embarrassed that you didn't find her earlier.
Yeah.
Or that the thing you didn't like about her means that you don't really get it yet. The Joni Mitchell thing is like when you're not ready to stand there and stare in that mirror yet, you almost cannot abide Joni Mitchell. You can't, it's not right. Just a I'm not a fan. It's a like, I'm not a fan. And I don't know why, but it's really, you know, it's just a little too potent of not a fan. And I think that I can't speak for her, but that a lot of women have grappled with that. And that when they do find Joni Mitchell, it's when they're ready to make some kind of emotional transition in life where they're ready to like look at themselves. And men may never like Joni Mitchell for the vulnerability and the strength and ability that she has to expose herself in a really beautiful way and sort of still be a total dom. But it was a profound crash landing into my early 30s when I found Joni, just like you. And for the same reason, I didn't get it at first.
What was that crash landing like? What happened? What changed your mind?
Well, my wife at the now, but at the time, you know, we were just dating. She came out, she's from England. And so we met and we had the long distance relationship, which is just really not conducive to dating in any way, because everything you get thrust into these domestic situations, like if you want to go out on a date, it's like, let's spend a week together in a cabin. So yeah. It was really make or break. And like our first trip together, I brought an album, she brought an album, a couple of albums, each of us. And she brought Blue. And I remember her putting it on. And it was that first song, which is the same song T-Bone Burnett had played me, you know, 10 years earlier at that point. And when it gets to the whole, I want to shampoo you, I want to talk to you. And I was like, I started laughing. I was like, God, I've always hated this song. I'm just not a fan of Joni Mitchell. And she's like, what do you mean you're not a fan of Joni Mitchell? I mean, A, she's a year older than me, by the way. Catherine is, and her mother loves Joni Mitchell. Joni Mitchell's like her number one hero. So I was like, yeah, I don't know. There's just something really not tough. It's like flowery about it. I hate the I want to shampoo you thing. It just freaks me out. And she was like really grump. Like we had a fight, like our first fight. And she was like, I don't think I can get, we can't get our heads around this if you don't know, you know, about Joni Mitchell. If you think Joni Mitchell's funny, do you know what the song Little Green is about? Of course, I didn't know because I'd never listened past the first song on Blue. And she told me what it was about, you know, it was about Joni making this really difficult, that's an understatement, making this unthinkable and brave decision to give up her daughter for adoption after having the child for a long period of time. And it was so unthinkable to me, even as a person that wasn't a mother at the time, that I remember listening to it and it just breaking my heart, and not in a weak way, but like thinking that that was like the toughest song I'd ever heard. And it made me realize I didn't get what femininity was. I didn't understand what it was. And I was viewing it through a misogynistic lens.
Yeah. Should we play Little Green right now?
Absolutely.
Let's do it. It's Joni Mitchell, Little Green.
Born with the moon in Cancer, choose her a name she will answer to. Call her green, and the winters cannot fade her. Call her green for the children who've made her little green. Gypsy dancer. He went to California. Hearing that everything's warmer there. So you write him a letter and say, her eyes are blue. He sends you a poem and she's lost to you. Little green, he's a nonconformer. Just a little green, like the color when the spring is born. There'll be crocuses to bring to school tomorrow. Just a little green, like the nights when the northern lights perform. There'll be icicles and birthday clothes. sometimes they'll be sorrow.
From her album Blue, that was Joni Mitchell with Little Green. I'm Raina Duris talking to Brandi Carlile today on World Cafe. I can definitely hear some Joni influence on your vocals in the last song that we're going to hear you perform today called You and Me on the Rock. I don't want to assume here, but it feels
just in the
like,
vocals?
At least in the vocals.
The whole thing.
The whole thing. But it was like the vocals were the first thing that struck me. I was like, whoa.
Right.
Because it's very hard to sing like Joni. I've tried to learn Helpless.
Help me.
Thank you.
I think I'm falling.
I've tried to learn that for karaoke. It never happened. I don't know why.
That
I was like, I really love
go-to
it.
Go-to karaoke song I've
terrible.
Ever heard in my life. Girl,
I
you should
just
do a Bohemian Rhapsody.
I know. I never did it. But yeah. I remember practicing it around my house and I was like, this is impossible. I've listened to this song a million times. I still don't know where her voice is going to go next. Like, she's got that kind of unpredictable quality. Mm-hmm. The way she sings that I heard it immediately in this song.
Right.
I don't want to assume anything. It feels like You and Me on the Rock is a love song, kind of a domestic bliss moments in here. What can you tell us about You and Me on the Rock before we hear it?
Well, you're right about the Joni influence, and it was a conscious decision because I was realizing that if I didn't do it once all the way, that I was going to do it throughout the whole album, every song. And I didn't want to put out an album that was a hat tilt to Joni. You know, it was really profoundly impactful to me to do Blue at Disney Hall. And then the last couple of years I've spent with Joni doing music and you know, kind of connecting souls. They can influence me, but they can't define me. And I knew that there was going to be a whole get this out of my system moment. And that's what You and Me on the Rock is. It was me just diving in. Even wrote it on a dulcimer with the twins. You know, it was a shameless acceptance of it. And Joni, of course, she doesn't pull any punches and she doesn't abide derivatives. And I remember taking that up to her house and playing it for her, thinking that I was going to get that side eye. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of grooving and listening to it. I told her the same thing I told you before. I was like, listen, Joni, I just did this, okay? Because if I didn't do it once, you know, for 3.5 minutes, I was going to do it on the whole record. And
yeah.
And I played it for her. And it's like, I think it's like track 2. And it ends and it's like, da 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 da. And she looks at me and she goes, sounds like a hit.
Oh my gosh, that's the best thing she could have said.
And I was like, yes, you know, she forgives me for the total unabashed, you know, derivative, and also thinks it sounds like a hit. So I'm proud of it. I'm proud to have been affected by, you know, maybe one of the greatest songwriters of our time.
Well, we have to listen to it. Here it is. It's You and Me on the Rock, performed live by Brandi Carlile for World Cafe.
There's nothing in that town I need after everything we've been through.
It's a horror to win. It's a record-breaking tide, and it is a rolling net. It's a big sea, but it can't touch you and me. It's just a water.
Performed live for World Cafe, Brandi Carlile, You and Me on the Rock. You can really hear in that performance how much fun you're having, just the energy of that live performance. Before I let you go, what does it feel like to perform these songs that you wrote during a time when you maybe weren't sure if you'd ever get to perform live for people ever again?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I mean, you're right. It's so cathartic. It's still a mixed bag because everybody's so worried and so nervous. And keeping each other safe is the number one priority, I think, for all artists now. But artists are sort of born to go out into the world in uncertain times, you know, within reason. And so when I'm playing these songs for people, it feels like a really important moment in human history, a big turning point.
Brandi Carlile, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You just heard an encore of our 2021 session with Brandi Carlile. She has a new album coming out October 24th called Returning to Myself. And that same day, she'll be right here on World Cafe to dig into it with you and me. Big shout out to all of our affiliates across the country who bring you this show, including KUHB out of St. Paul Island, Alaska. We produce this show at WXPN at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm Raina Duris. Thanks for listening to World Cafe from NPR.
World Cafe is supported by Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and by the Wallace Foundation, an independent nonpartisan research foundation collaborating with grantees and partners in the arts, school leadership, and youth development. More at wallacefoundation.org.
Another hour ahead of the World Cafe. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Check out our playlist, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org. Sally, that feeling's coming.
That's a new song from Roll Model.